This episode was generously sponsored by PathsToParentHub.com. It's a wonderful resource for all things donor conception. If you are interested in donor conception because you're a single parent-to-be, if you're part of a heterosexual couple, or you're part of a queer couple, it doesn't matter. You will find the community that's right for you and lots of education as well. It's a wonderful resource, so check them out, PathsToParentHub.com. If you or someone you know is interested in becoming a single mother by choice, you should really listen to this episode. Today, I interview a woman named Kristen Duncan, and you may not know her, but she's really well known on social media because she shares her heart and soul with her audience. She talks about her journey to single motherhood in such a beautiful way, shares her triumphs and her difficulties and all sorts of other things about choosing her donor, about her path to single parenthood, and about finding donor-related siblings. So if you are interested in any of these subjects, tune in. I think you'll be really interested in hearing what she has to say. Welcome to Building Your Family. This is a podcast about donor conception, surrogacy, fertility treatment, and all the ways a modern family is built. I'm your host. My name is Lisa Schumann. I'm a therapist and author, and I am passionate about helping people have a better path to parenthood. And today we have such a lovely episode to share with you. I've invited Kristen Duncan, who is a lovely person and very well known on social media because she shares so much of her heart and soul with all of us. And it helps us learn about treatment, learn about her experience as a single mom, and also helps us feel less alone. So I'd like to share her with you today. So welcome, Kristen. So nice for you to join us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I'm so happy to be here.
How could we start best? Should we start with talking about how you decided to be a single mom?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that. So I was about 29 when I ended a long-term relationship of 10 years and I started dating online. I figured, you know, I'm only 29. I'm sure I'll meet someone soon and we'll start a family. And that was kind of always the plan. I always wanted to have kids. And unfortunately, online dating is a bit of a disaster these days. And as I got older, closer to my mid-30s, and I was dating men that were in their mid-30s or even early 40s, I just started to realize that most of these men either already had kids and were done having kids, or they didn't want them in the first place. So That combined with the fact that dating wasn't really going well, I wasn't meeting people that I wanted to be my life partner, that I wanted to raise a family with. And then I was 34. So I've been doing the online dating thing for a while and without much luck. So this is 2020. I had been living with a single girlfriend at the time, and her and I had big plans to go out and meet people in person that year. We were done with online dating. We were going to go out to bars or whatever it took just to meet people. And then the pandemic hit. So I just kind of started wondering, like, how long is this going to last? How long are we going to be in lockdown? How am I going to meet people this way? I'm 34 now, and like, I would have had a baby yesterday. I was so ready. But I wanted to make sure that it was with the right person. I didn't want to just pick anybody and jump in too quickly. I wanted to make sure that they were going to be the right person. And so in my head, I'm doing the math and I'm like, this is going to take 2 or 3 years before I'm ready to have a baby with somebody. And by that point, like, I'm looking at 37 if I meet somebody tomorrow. And now we're in the middle of this lockdown. And so I just thought, like, the numbers are not adding up. I know I want to have more than one child, so I don't really want to start having children that late. And so in my head, it was just kind of the only option left to become a single mom by choice. And I had kind of been joking about it on and off for a couple of years, saying that, you know, if I didn't meet someone, I was just going to have a baby by myself. So I finally decided to go to the fertility clinic and get some tests done and just see what was happening and if it was possible.
At that time, were you thinking, I'm going to share with my friends and family first and kind of test the waters? Or were you thinking, I don't care what anybody thinks, I'm just going to go do this?
So mostly I had kind of already made up my mind that I was doing it, but because I had been talking about it for a while, nobody was really surprised. My family was pretty supportive. They all have lots of kids. My sisters do. And I come from a big family. So I think everybody knew that I wanted kids and totally understood the desire to have them. And so luckily they were, yeah, very supportive and not super surprised by the time I actually decided to start pursuing it.
Wow. Okay. So you weren't feeling like you were kind of coming again up against your family members or friends, and everybody was supportive. So that must have been helpful.
Yeah, I think I was really lucky that way, because I do talk to a lot of women now that don't have that family support and that don't have as much support from their friends as they would like. I think a lot of women get told, do you know how hard this is going to be? Like, it's going to be so hard. And what I say to that is like, yeah, parenting is hard. Like, parenting is going to be hard no matter how you pursue it. And becoming a parent with a partner doesn't always mean that you'll always have a partner. So I just feel like for so many of us now, this is such a great option.
You know, it's so interesting you say that, Kristen, because one of my favorite posts on social media that you have is, and I'm sure I'm going to botch this up, but something like, it's hard to be a single mom, but it's also hard to be single or and not have a child. So which hard do you want to choose, or something like that?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. I saw another similar post and I just thought, yeah, it's so true. Like, parenting is hard, but so is being single and really wanting a child and not being able to have one because mm-hmm. you don't have a partner, or yeah. thinking that you can't have one because you don't have a partner. And I went through years of that after having gone through years of a long-term relationship where he wasn't sure if he wanted kids and wanted to get married. So it was just really hard watching. I have three younger sisters and they all started, well, two of them started having kids well before I did. So I got to be an auntie and I love those kids so much that I was just like, I knew that I wanted to have that for myself.
You got to try it out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
So then what happened next? So you went to the clinic and they said, okay, you're fertile enough, let's get started. And then did you say, okay, I'd like to get sperm from an egg bank or use somebody I know? Or how did you decide on that process?
So I went in for testing. I think I had my ultrasound in about December of 2020. And then there was a huge backup at fertility clinics at this point because they had been closed for several months in 2020 because of the pandemic. So it took me 3 months to get back in to see my doctor. And in the meantime, they said, well, we see that you have some cysts. We can't really tell you much more than that. You'll have to wait till you get in to talk with the doctor in March. So I had to wait 3 months. So of course, I'm doing all the Googling of like, what does this mean? And some of the things say like, cysts are not a big deal. Everybody gets cysts, or maybe it's PCOS. And so I really didn't know the details until March. And then I had a really shocking phone call with my doctor, who basically said I was close to going into menopause. I had only two follicles on my antral follicle count for my ultrasound. And I had a huge dermoid cyst on one ovary that I had no idea that I had. And my AMH was quite low. So I had low ovarian reserve as well. So it was just shock after shock after shock.
Oh my
gosh.
Here
I'm looking at my sisters who had, I think one had three kids and one had two kids at the time. And I'm like, oh, my family's so fertile. Like, we don't have any trouble having kids. And I've never had painful periods or like any issues in terms of symptoms. So I just thought, you know, my fertility's fine.
Yeah.
And then to top it off, I had never tried with a partner to get pregnant. So I didn't even have those months of trying and slowly realizing that like something was wrong. It was literally just one day to the next and this phone call that was totally life changing.
Oh my gosh.
And I was only 34 when I started. Like, by then I think I was 35 by the time the phone call. But I had thought, you know, good thing I'm starting this when I'm still young. I still have lots of time, which is what people always told me when I kind of lamented the not having found a partner and not having kids yet. They're like, oh, you're only 35. So-and-so got pregnant at 40 or 42. Like, you have lots of time. Don't worry. You can still meet someone.
Oh, boy. It's a good thing you didn't follow that advice.
Yes. I'm very glad I did.
Oh my goodness. So how did you handle that? That must have been so shocking.
So it definitely was. I started reading some books. I went to a naturopath, which really didn't end up helping that much. And then I was just preparing for the cyst removal surgery. So they ended up in June going in to do the cyst removal with a laparoscopy. And while I was kind of in that waiting period is when I started looking for a donor. So the plan was to get the cyst removed and then do some IUIs. I didn't really have anybody in my life that I wanted to even ask to be a known donor. I immediately went to look at sperm banks, and my clinic had recommended a couple. I live in Canada, so we're quite restricted as to which clinics we can use, which donors we can use. They have to adhere to all of the Canadian guidelines and stuff like that to be imported. So my clinic had recommended that I do the genetic carrier screen first before I picked a donor. So I went ahead and did that, and I had a counseling appointment at my clinic. I was kind of just trying to get all of the things done that I could before the surgery instead of just waiting and not doing anything. So I did all that. And then in about April of 2021, or a little bit before that, I started looking at donors, and I narrowed it down to Seattle Sperm Bank, mostly because I tested positive for something. I can't even remember what it's called now, but it was a specific gene that I carried a mutation for. Mm. And Seattle Sperm Bank was one of the few banks that actually tested for that one. It wasn't one of the ones on the typical carrier screen. So I could have picked a donor from a different bank, but it just seemed like the least risky option to pick from a bank that tested for it. Mm-hmm. And so I started going through the profiles, and I think the only criteria I put in was Caucasian, same as me. And it narrowed it down to maybe 20 some donors, and that was all I had to choose from.
Wow.
Yeah. So I kind of started looking through them. I was really looking at things like their education, their health history. In terms of like Seattle Sperm Bank, I really liked that they didn't show adult photos, because by this point I was really sick of dating apps. And I think seeing a lot of like adult photos in their descriptions would have felt too much like online dating.
Oh, interesting.
So I was really happy they only had like childhood and baby photos. And then I really liked that they had audio interviews there. So I could listen to their voice, listen to them answer some questions about themselves, and just kind of get a better sense of who they were as a person instead of just on paper.
Interesting. So it just goes to show you everybody has different preferences, right? Some people really want the adult photos. Some people don't. It's so interesting. So what struck you about your donor that you really liked about him?
At the time, again, we're just coming not even out of the pandemic fully, but there was still a shortage of sperm donors. And so at the time, it was a lot about availability. So I had sent a list of, I think, my top 10 that I narrowed it down to Seattle Sperm Bank. They got back to me and said, you know, these ones are not coming back, but these ones might be. So I put my name on some wait lists. And then it was really just down to the two that were available first. And there was two at the same time. So then I went back through their profiles, and I was kind of just looking for ways that we connected at that point, because I'd already looked and narrowed it down to people by their education and their health history, like I said. So I wasn't necessarily looking for like someone with blonde hair or somebody with blue eyes or any of that. I just wanted someone that I could be, I guess, proud to show my son or daughter, whatever I ended up having, like, this is the donor that I used, and here are some characteristics about him. I just wanted to pick someone that I could feel good about, I guess.
It sounds like you were really thoughtful in thinking about, like, here's the heritable issues that I have. I have this genetic difficulty that I don't want to replicate. And then I have to think about getting a healthy family tree. And then after that, it narrows your choices to just a couple of people, which I think is such a great way to look for a donor, because so often people are anxious to find a donor and they think, oh, well, this guy's handsome or not. And that's how they start. So I think it's so smart, because you're really not thinking about that person, right? You're also thinking about their whole genetic pool is going to be translated into potentially into your child. So I think that's fantastic. And also in the end, you decided you wanted to feel really good about this person that you could show to your child and feel good about who he was. So that's wonderful. And were you able to say, okay, I'm going to order enough sperm for maybe two children? Did he have enough?
At the time, I ordered 2 vials, and then I knew right away, though, that that probably wasn't going to be enough for more than one child. So I immediately went back on the wait list. I can't remember if I could only afford 2 vials at first or if that was all that I was allowed to purchase because of the shortage. But regardless, I was able to go back on the wait list right away. And so when his name came up again as being available, I did get 4 more. So I had a total of 6 vials.
Right. And then how was your fertility journey?
I started out after I got the cyst removed. I found out during the laparoscopy that I also had endometriosis,
which I
had no idea about. I know. So shock after shock. But they didn't do anything about it. It was mild. And so they just left it and told me about it, took the cyst out. And I took about 2 months to heal after that before I started doing IUIs. I did 2 IUIs with my fertility clinic. And looking back, I'm a little bit annoyed because I think their standard protocol is to do usually unmedicated IUIs with no monitoring. And so for me, because I had the low ovarian reserve, they did do medicated IUIs, but we did no monitoring and no trigger shot, nothing like that. So I honestly feel like I don't even know if the timing was right. I was doing ovulation test strips at home and I would call them and they'd say, yeah, okay, come in on this day. And they didn't do any kind of confirmation to make sure I was ovulating. They just, you know, did the IUI and then that was it. So I did 2 of those. Both of them didn't work. Mm. And I had started the process for the 3rd one. They kind of recommended 3 or 4 before moving to IVF. But I was starting the 3rd one. I had literally already started the letrozole. And I was like, this is not what I want to be doing. Like, I know I want multiple children. Now I'm 35, almost 36. I feel like I should be doing IVF. And they had told me kind of at the beginning of my journey that IVF would not be good for me because of my low follicle count, that it would be really hard for me to get a lot of embryos because I probably wouldn't get very many eggs. So I knew that going in, but I had also had some higher follicle counts during the IUIs, and I thought maybe it'll be okay. And at that point, I just couldn't handle doing the IUIs anymore. And it was quite expensive. Like, I was spending $1,000 per vial of sperm every month, plus the $500 for the procedure.
Yes.
And so I did many more of those. I was like, I might as well be doing IVF.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so interesting because so many people think that. They think, okay, well, I'm going to do a low-tech approach, mm-hmm. or I'm going to try to kind of cut corners here and there. But then because those approaches are typically not as effective, you end up slowly dripping the money away rather than just going for the thing that's going to more likely going to be able to work.
Absolutely. And I think the part of the problem is that fertility clinics treat everyone the same. So whether you're a single mom by choice or you're part of a couple, they kind of have their process and their procedure. And I don't think, at least my clinic, takes into consideration the fact that we are spending $1,000 per vial of sperm. And looking back, I should have insisted on being monitored, on doing a trigger, maybe doing some injectables. If I was going to do IUI, at least let's make sure that everything's happening right. And I think for them, they think of IUIs as like a cheap, easy solution. But it is if you're part of a couple and you have free sperm. Like, then you're paying $500 for one shot every month. You could do it for 6 months or 8 months or whatever before switching to IVF. And that makes sense to me.
It's a very good point.
They haven't adjusted their procedures and their processes for women who are fertile, maybe not necessarily me, but other single moms by choice that come into fertility clinics and their fertility is fine, but they are now spending over $2,000, I've heard, per vial of sperm and doing these IUIs, which are now like $1,000 each time. So that's a crazy amount of money to be spending on such a small chance that it's going to work.
Yes, I agree with you. That's a really good point. So you just then said, okay, we need to move forward. You kind of pushed the envelope a little.
I really pushed for being able to do IVF. And luckily, I had already talked to my doctor about it. So she'd already put the potential protocol into my notes, because I literally switched like within 2 days of starting my 3rd IUI. So I canceled the IUI. I switched to priming for IVF. So I did estrogen priming. And then the following month did the stims and went to the egg retrieval. So the egg retrieval ended up almost being canceled. I had started out with something like 8 follicles at baseline, but lots of them didn't respond. And so at one point they said, there's only 3 growing. So we're not sure, like, you might want to think about canceling. And I had spent at that point probably $7,000 on medications already. I was on the highest possible dose. I did have some coverage for the medications, but I have a maximum on that. So that money was gone. Those benefits were gone. So in my head, I was like, well, this is just what my fertility is. Like, I have a low follicle count. I have low ovarian reserve. I don't necessarily think it's going to be better next month or the month after if we do this again. And so my doctor kind of said the same thing, and we decided to go ahead with the retrieval. She thought maybe we'd get 4 or 5 eggs if we were really lucky, but we got 2. And only one of those eggs fertilized. The other one didn't fertilize. So on day 3, they said, let's do a fresh transfer. And I was a little bit hesitant at first. My plan had been to bank embryos and do multiple rounds to freeze them. But at that point, I was so ready to be a mom. I was not sure that I would get to be a mom. I was really scared about my fertility. And I just wondered if, you know, is it ever going to work? And so they said, your best bet is to just put it back in and do a fresh transfer. So I did, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very happy ending to that story.
It was.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you have a little boy now, right?
I do. He's 20 months old. His name is Blake, and he's
so
amazing.
Cute.
So amazing that he makes me want another one.
That's so wonderful. How was it, just for everyone who's out there and curious about it, your process going through, I guess, both things, the fertility treatment process, you had to advocate by yourself. Obviously, you're not coming home to a partner saying, let's figure out what we want to do. You really had to make that decision alone, go to the doctor and advocate for yourself and go through treatment alone. So I guess I'm wondering about that, and then about the pregnancy, being on your own, and how that experience was.
So the fertility treatment, I didn't find it that bad to be doing it on my own. I think a lot of women that end up deciding to become single moms by choice, like myself, are very independent. And I honestly can't imagine having to navigate that with a partner. I think it might be harder, because for me, I had to make the decisions and everything, but I didn't have anybody holding me back. So I didn't have anybody disagreeing with my decision. I didn't have to compromise on anything. Mm-hmm. When I wanted to switch from IUI to IVF, I was like, that's what I want. We're doing it. And it happened. I think it would be really hard to just hold that space for your partner's feelings throughout the process and to make those decisions as a couple.
Yeah.
Obviously, yes, it would be great to have had that support throughout the process, but I guess I knew going into it that it was just me, and that was normal for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really miss a partner throughout that process, and the pregnancy was kind of the same. By that point, I was just so happy to be pregnant, and I felt like this was everything I'd always wanted, and it was finally coming through. And so I just had the best pregnancy. I was really lucky. I wasn't super nauseous or didn't have a lot of other side effects until the last trimester. I had a little bit of rib discomfort and stuff like that, but I just really enjoyed pregnancy. I worked out throughout my pregnancy, and I didn't really feel like I needed a partner during that part either. I worried a lot about when I had the baby, though. When I was pregnant, I thought there would be all these hormones, and was I going to be really sad that this baby didn't have a father and that I didn't have a partner to help take care of the baby and take care of me? And luckily, that fear was never realized. I never really had that moment of I wish I had a partner here. I had my best friend in the delivery room with me, and
she's actually
a nurse. She delivers babies sometimes.
Oh, wow.
So she was a perfect person to have in there. She was a great support. And then my mom came and stayed with me for 3 weeks after the baby was born. And someone had given her this amazing advice that I wouldn't need her to hold the baby. I would need her to just do all the other things. And so she cooked and she cleaned and she did, of course, cuddle the baby lots and help me with the baby when I needed it. But it was just, it was perfect. It was exactly what I needed for those first 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I kind of joke with my friends that I would rather have my mom than a husband during those first 3 weeks because she was so great.
Be a hard time having their husband cleaning up after you all the time.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people with partners, I mean, again, it's you're both getting used to a new baby and you both don't really know what you're doing. And I was really lucky that I had my mom and she had some wisdom to offer once in a while. She'd raised 4 kids. And so it was really nice having her there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And what about parenthood? Is it what you expected it to be? Is it different? Is it something that you feel like would be, again, very different if you had a partner?
I think it is what I expected for the most part. I didn't realize maybe how unrelenting it is. It's every single day, all the time. I don't have family in town. So as helpful as my family is, they're almost 2 hours away. And my parents spend part of the year in Palm Springs. They're snowbirds, so they escape from the winter. So they're gone for a lot of the time. I also think the part of parenthood that's been difficult is just knowing that it comes in phases. I think every phase that I went through with Blake, from when he was a newborn to now, you start to think like, oh my gosh, this is my life forever. Like, I'm never going to be able to cook another meal again because I have to hold this baby. And how am I going to survive? But then that stage passes and you move on to the next stage where they're like a crazy toddler and they're running around and you're like, okay, I can cook meals, but like now he needs my attention more, or now he wants me to look at things, or he like pulls my hand and makes me go and see things that he wants me to see. So it's just, yeah, different stages. I think all of those stages would be hard with a partner as well. Maybe there would be a bit more help. And I do think I kind of wish I had found somebody that was like a regular babysitter and gotten them to come more regularly when he was younger, because as soon as he started daycare, it was kind of like a huge weight off my shoulders. It had been just the two of us at home for 13 months. And I think I left him maybe a couple times for a couple of hours, usually with my mom, or yeah, I think just with my mom, never overnight for that, for those first 13 months. So I didn't have much of a break. And then when I finally did and he started daycare, I realized how much I needed it. I needed a little bit of that time. So yeah, I kind of wish that I would have just organized something for that in town, but it is hard when you don't have family around. And I think a lot of my friends are just busy with their own lives and their own kids and stuff like that. So it just, that part was hard for sure.
And what about now? You're now deciding, well, even though that was hard, it's so great, I still want to redo it. I want another one. What happened then? Like, how did you decide about timing? And how did you decide I'm ready to go forward and I have the bandwidth for it now and all of that?
So I knew from the beginning that I wanted more than one. So it was pretty much just a matter of, I guess, making sure that that was still true after having had one on my own and knowing what it was really like. But it was. And then I had to wait until I went back to work, till I was done breastfeeding. That kind of all came together in about September, I guess I started, of 2023. So last September. So I decided to do another round of IVF. At this point, I was kind of running low on donor sperm. I had 3 vials left. I was worried because I knew that now that I was another 2 years older, I'm 38 now. I knew with my ovarian reserve and endometriosis and egg quality that it might be difficult and it might take several rounds of IVF to have success. So I asked my fertility clinic if they would use partial vials, because up to that point, they had used a full vial for the round of IVF that I did, I guess, and for each IUI. And at first, my doctor thought that they weren't able to do that, but I kind of pushed for it because I knew clinics in the States were doing it. And so eventually she found out that, yes, in fact, they can do it now. Couldn't do it in the past, but now they were able to do it. So my third vial I used for the last IVF cycle in October. That one I got 4 eggs and 3 of them were mature. Only one of them fertilized again. And so we did a day 2 fresh transfer this time and it didn't work. And then they used the same vial for my most recent IVF round. So I decided to wait a little bit in between, mostly because of Christmas. That messes things up with fertility clinic closures and stuff. And then in January, I went and did ovarian PRP in the States with Dr. Amy. So they inject platelet-rich plasma into your ovaries in hopes that it can help with increased follicle count, increased AMH, increased euploid embryos after retrieval. Then I had to wait another cycle to start IVF. And so I just finished that last round here in March and I had a much better round. We got 4 eggs retrieved, 3 were mature. And this time I had 2 eggs fertilized. So that's double the fertilization I've ever had. And we still had those 2 growing on day 2. They actually said it was 2 perfect 4-cell embryos. And so I did another fresh transfer of both. And in my head, I thought, this has to work. Like, that's my best round yet. I've got 2 this time, like one of them has to work. And again, it didn't work.
So disappointing. So upset.
It was really disappointing. I think every time I'm so optimistic and you just get your hopes up that this is going to be the one that works. And it's always shocking and devastating when it doesn't.
Of course. Oh my gosh. So what is your feeling now, Kristen? Are you feeling like you're managing this? I mean, it's so hard to go through the roller coaster of fertility treatment and the hope and disappointment and the cycles and the frustration and the sadness and the fear and the anxiety and all of that. But you also have to come home and take care of your son and kind of like keep it together to kind of manage everything on your own. So how are you managing?
I would definitely say that's been the hardest part. It's very different going through IVF with a toddler and going through a failed transfer with a toddler. It's also different in good ways. I think that if this had been my first cycle or my second cycle and I didn't have a child, it would have been 10 times as heartbreaking. It was still devastating, but to be able to wake up the next day and play with my son and laugh with him, it just makes such a difference. So that's actually been really helpful. Of course, the tears and the emotions and the breakdowns are mostly reserved for after he's in bed. But I think that in a way, yeah, having him makes me a bit stronger because I'm just so grateful to have him. And I'm more and more grateful for the little miracle that he is, the fact that it even worked at all after going through 2 more failed cycles.
So you're now thinking about trying it again?
I'm not just thinking about trying it again. I've actually started another cycle
already. Oh my
goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. So I wanted to take advantage of the PRP. The benefits of that only last about 3 months. And because I did mini stim last time, I did such a low dose of letrozole and then the Pergoveris, which is the FSH. My clinic was fine with me doing a back-to-back cycle. So I'm already back on the letrozole and I'll start injections and have an egg retrieval next week.
Wow. You're strong, Kristen, and determined, which is probably one of the things that have been so helpful, having this personality to be able to navigate all of these things and advocate for yourself. But I guess that's important for everyone to hear that it's so important to do that. And it's hard because, of course, you feel knocked down over and over again by this process, right? Every piece of the story that you're sharing, there's any part of it, you would have the opportunity to just say, you know, I'm going to like, you know, crawl under my bed and hide from the world because I can't deal with this. But you're so resilient, you're getting back up again and again and dusting yourself off and saying, I'm going for it. I'm going to really insist on having the treatment I want and get the things that I need and get this extra treatment and really follow my dreams because that's really what I want.
Thank you.
And it's so important though, right? Because we all have our dreams in life. And for some people, one child is enough. And for other people, 3 children is not enough, right? So we all have to be true to ourselves and follow whatever's important to us There's no right answer, just the right answer for us, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I certainly wish you the best of luck in this process. This is a really big deal to continue to pursue it, but it sounds like you're doing everything you possibly can.
Yeah, I definitely am. And I hope that this is the cycle.
Yes.
This is the one.
Absolutely. So just to shift gears a little bit, Kristen, and I'm wondering if, as you're thinking about this process, and I'm sure that because, yes, hopefully this is the one, this will be it, but there's so much that goes into it, and I'm sure you're thinking about it all the time. On a side note, certainly I would imagine that there's also some other things that you have to manage, as a single mom. You have to kind of think about, what is this going to look like for my son, in terms of a disclosure story? What am I going to tell him about the donor? Have I thought about donor-related siblings and where are they and what are they like? And what are my thoughts about that? So I'm wondering if your mind has been kind of moving in that area. I know certainly your focus right now is the cycle, but I'm curious about how you've been feeling about those topics too.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about that. So I am really lucky because from as early as when I was pregnant with Blake, I joined a Facebook group for Seattle Sperm Bank families, and I was able to find some families that shared the same donor. So I was connected with one of them through that group, and she had actually started a private Facebook group for all of us. We connected with some people on the Seattle Sperm Bank Donor Sibling Registry, and then others on that Facebook group. And now there are over 20 kids in our little group on Facebook, all Blake's siblings. He's one of the 20, I guess. And they range in age from, I think the twins were 4 when Blake was born, so they might be 5 now. They're the oldest. Mm-hmm. And then all the way down to a little baby that was born, I want to say in the last 6 to 9 months. So she can't be very old. And one of them actually lives in our city. So we've met up with him, and his mom is also a single mom by choice.
Wow.
And we see them every couple of months.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy because most of his siblings are in the United States, of course, because it's Seattle Sperm Bank. There's one in Malta, one in Israel, and then one other one that happens to be in our city in Canada.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. What are the chances?
You got together with this other single mom, and it happens to be another single mom by choice, which is amazing too, right?
Yeah. And she has a son as well.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
And how was that for you?
It was really fun. I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of watch the boys grow up together because we're so close geographically. It's easy for us to just get together every once in a while. I would say just because of the ages of the kids, they haven't really had any interest in each other yet. So the few times we have gotten together, they haven't paid much attention to each other. So it's just kind of us visiting, and eventually they'll sort of start to play together and interact more, I'm sure.
Wow, that's amazing. And people say sometimes it's also, so I don't know if you have this feeling, that it's also so nice to have other women that you're talking to when you have this in common, like you all pick the same guy, right? You have this thing in common, apart from the fact that you have a donor-conceived child and that you use the same donor. It's also this feeling like you, this was your, for whatever reason, your choice.
Yeah, that's so true. I think there are, in our family group, maybe like 12 single moms by choice. So there's quite a few of us.
Wow.
And then the rest are couples. And I definitely feel a bit more of a common thread with the single moms. I think just because we don't have the partner. And so the experience has been a lot more similar. Interestingly enough, one of the donor siblings' moms, she had followed me on Instagram before because she was trying to become a single mom by choice, and a lot of other single moms by choice follow me on Instagram. So she actually knew me before and then realized later on that we shared a donor.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Such a small world.
What are the chances of that happening? Oh my gosh.
I know. It's crazy. I really enjoyed having contact with those donor siblings, and we're actually trying to arrange a meetup in the States this summer. So I'm hoping to be able to go, depending on what's happening with IVF and all that sort of thing, because I would love to meet some of the other kids and their parents. Mm. And I mean, I have tried to start telling Blake his story about his donor. I had a little board book made about the facts that I know about his donor. And so we read that a few times, and I'm just kind of practicing right now my story for him so that I could get comfortable with it and make sure that he kind of knows it all along. And that way it's never really a surprise for him. I mean, it's pretty hard to hide when you're a single mom by choice. I don't think that's something that really happens, but I do think if I can be super open and confident and just honest about everything, that's going to be easier for him in the long run.
And children, you know, obviously don't know, right? This is the family they have. It's not until they get a little bit older where they say, well, wait a minute, I'm, you know, part of a single mom family. But by then, if they already know about their donor conception story, that's an ideal circumstance, because then they have this identity consolidation of understanding where they're coming from, how they came into the world. And so that's wonderful.
Yeah. So that's the plan, that he'll always know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And what about the donor? Has anyone in your group looked for the donor or contacted the donor?
So nobody has. Like I said, the oldest kids are 5, but he is an open ID donor. So they will be able to reach out and contact the donor when they turn 18. So I'm not sure how that will work in terms of the other kids, because obviously it's supposed to be when they each turn 18, they get his contact information, but we are all in contact, and I'm sure they'll let us know how it goes.
Yes.
So, I mean, that'll be when Blake is like 13.
And the donor may be fine with that. I mean, that's just kind of the way this arbitrary 18, you know, rule is written. Doesn't mean that, you know, the donor may not feel comfortable with just meeting everyone.
Yeah. So I think it's great that we're all in touch. I am interested to know how many more families are out there that aren't part of this Facebook group. It's so hard to know, especially with the donor being in multiple countries.
Yes.
That kind of resets the family limits. I do know he's retired now. So he's hit his family limit in the US.
Right. But there's just no way to know for certain.
Yeah.
And that would be another nice thing about trying to get to know him, because then you can talk to him about some of those things.
Yeah. And I do think it would be really interesting to be able to meet him someday and just see, you know, what kinds of things does Blake get from him? And
if he has maybe other children of his own too at this point.
Yeah. And it's really neat. We mostly just post photos of the kids in our Facebook group. And so it's really neat to see kind of similarities between the kids. Most of them have curly or wavy hair, and a few of them look quite similar. So it's really neat to see that.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's so lovely that you've really embraced his origins and his donor and his donor story and all of the siblings, Kristen. That's so nice. And, you know, he will over time decide how close he wants to be or not with them, but at least he has that connection and that opportunity available to him.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of the best of both worlds. And he may not get to meet all of them in person right away. It might take years for that to happen, but at least he'll know who they are and kind of have an idea of how many of them are out there.
That's great.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was curious about was, how are you managing disclosure to other people? We talk a lot about this, you know, privacy versus secrecy situation. Of course, your child's going to know about the donor siblings. But when it comes to, you know, people in the daycare or in the supermarket or your neighbor, how are you feeling about that? And how has that been evolving for you?
I actually feel pretty good about it. I think a lot of how other people react to those kinds of disclosures have to do with how you tell them and how you feel about it. I've always been pretty confident about my decision to become a single mom by choice and to use a donor. And I get a really good reaction from most people when I tell them. I think a lot of people think that it's really brave to do it on your own. A lot of people just want to know, what's it like choosing a donor? What's the process like? And they have questions about it. I think the hardest part is those random interactions, like you say, like in the supermarket or doctor's office or whatever, when someone says like, oh, he's so tall. Is his dad tall?
Mm-hmm.
I just find people are assuming, because that's normally the case. They don't mean anything hurtful by it. And so usually I just respond with, oh, no, he doesn't have a dad. I used a donor. And then they're really intrigued often and they want to have a conversation about it. So it actually sparks conversation. And I think it maybe opens up their eyes a little bit to, oh, yeah, like there are different ways of building a family. And it's not just mom and a dad. So I think that's a good thing.
And what about in your area, like your area, your neighborhood, your daycare? Do you find that people are overall comfortable with it and welcoming?
Yeah, I found a lot of people just aren't fazed by it at all. Like I told some of the staff at his daycare, and they didn't really even ask a lot of questions about it. They're just like, okay, great. Thanks for letting us know. And it's probably becoming more and more common to have different types of families. We're in a, not a major city, but a big enough city. There's over 1 million people. So it's not like it's a small town or anything like that. I mean, I come from a really small town in rural Alberta. And even there, people are very accepting of it and very like, good for you.
Nice.
That's amazing. So I've hardly had any negative comments at all in person. Of course, putting myself out there on social media is a bit of a different story. I've had a few reels and stuff that have gone viral, and that's kind of where the haters come out.
Like what?
Things like, that's really selfish. A baby should have a mom and a dad.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, a lot of really, really old-fashioned things that you think people really still think this in this day and age, but there are people out there. So I kind of make it my goal to educate as much as possible and to just block the people that can't be educated and that are still making hateful comments. Then they just get blocked.
It doesn't faze you. You're not feeling too thrown by those comments.
No, I have pretty thick skin. I worry more because I have a lot of women that come to my page because they're thinking about becoming single moms by choice. And I don't want them being scared off because of some random internet comment saying like, that's really selfish. So I try to respond to the comments because I feel like if they can see it from both points of view, then they might realize like, oh yeah, that person's not necessarily right. Like just because they're saying that it's selfish or that a baby needs a dad doesn't mean that that's true.
And where does it go then? Do the people fight you back or do they usually kind of calm down?
I would say they usually fight back. Usually it's people that are looking for a fight, I feel like. So often it just ends with me blocking them, but at least then the comment doesn't go unresponded to.
I see.
And I'll sometimes leave the comments there with my response just so that I think it's a lot of the fears that women have that these people kind of attack. Like one of the main things that women worry about when they're thinking about taking this path is, but, you know, will my son resent me because he doesn't have a father? Mm-hmm. Or is it a selfish choice because I want to have kids and I just want what I want regardless?
Yeah.
So I think that those are valid fears and valid concerns. So it's important to still talk about them and not just kind of shove them under the rug.
People who are hateful are really trying to kind of get you where it could hurt the most.
Yeah.
It's such a shame.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, the majority of comments on social media and on mine specifically are very supportive and people are really great. So it's been a good experience overall. It's just there's always those people that have to ruin it.
Yeah, that's such a shame. Well, it certainly sounds like, Kristen, from your story, and I think everybody listening to this would agree, that you've been so strong and resilient in the face of so many things, right? Trying to find the right donor, dealing with all those disappointments with, you know, the trouble with your genetics and the trouble with your eggs and the trouble with the surgeries. You know, one thing after another, you've had to kind of confront and then decide, you know, I really need to follow my path. In spite of this difficulty, I'm going to pursue what's important to me. I'm not going to let my dreams die in the waste can. I'm going to keep pursuing what's important to me. And I think that's really a beautiful thing. So my hat's off to you, Kristen. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Hopefully the determination and the perseverance pays off in the end.
Yes.
Definitely did with Blake.
Yes. Well, I think we're all keeping our fingers and toes and eyes crossed for you that this is going to be it. This next cycle be it, and then you'll have your sweet little family and no more aggravation. You've certainly worked so hard for it and deserve to have everything wonderful. I think you're doing such a great service to so many women being out there and being open about this and inspiring people to have the life and the family that they want.
Thank you. That's really my goal. I just want other single women to know that there is another way, and it's a great life, and you can be happy, and you can have your dreams of being a mother even without that partner.
And you have a very full life. You have family and friends and all sorts of. Do you think you might have a partner one day?
That's a great question. I think the other question I get a lot is like, but how do you date and how do you meet mm-hmm. someone?
Yes.
I haven't really crossed that bridge yet, to be honest. I mean, obviously right now in the middle of IVF, trying for baby number two, not really the best time to be looking for someone. I do think eventually, and I don't know when, but eventually I may start putting myself out there again and looking. I think actually it'll be easier now, because before, when I was looking for someone, it was always the kids issue that tripped us up. So
yes.
If I met a great guy, he was probably divorced and had two or three kids and was done. And so things ended immediately, because that was my top priority, was to find someone that I could have kids with. And so now, if I'm going to be dating, say, in my 40s, and I have two kids and he has two kids, I think that just gets rid of that issue a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, more people to potentially date. And I always mm-hmm. tell people, I swear Blake is going to introduce me to my future husband, because uh-huh. the kid is so friendly and he just talks to everybody and says hi. And so I think that's how it's going to happen.
Okay. All right. We're putting him in the role of matchmaker.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there anything else that we should share with the audience about your journey or advice that you find really helpful?
I think that pretty much covers it. I do know there are women who are considering this path, like I said, that do have people in their lives that are discouraging them from taking it. And I would just say that nobody can know how badly that you want to be a mother and what you're willing to do to achieve that dream if they haven't been in your exact position. And even then, there are women that maybe this choice isn't the right path. Maybe they are single and they really want to be moms, but they only want to do it with a partner. And in that case, this probably isn't the best decision for those people. So I just think if you're someone who is considering going down this path and having a baby on your own, just remember that you're the only one that can make that decision, and you're the only one who can know if it's right for you. I know that it was right for me, and I'm so confident in that decision that I just want other women to feel that way too, because I think that's the hardest part of the journey, is actually making the decision. Once you make the decision and you've gone down the path, then, I mean, you're kind of stuck with that decision. So it takes a lot of the weight off your shoulders, but it's that indecision in between where you're like, should I have a baby on my own? Should I not? Should I keep dating? Should I wait another year or another 2 years? And I always say, if you're in that indecision and you really can't make up your mind, just go get your fertility levels checked. Just start the process. No mm-hmm. one's going to say, okay, now you have to have a baby on your own because you got your fertility levels checked. But at least then you're dealing with all of the information. Because yes. if I had gone in 2 years earlier, that would have pushed me to start sooner. And then yeah. maybe it wouldn't be so difficult now trying for baby number two. So I think that's just important information to have, and that it's not that expensive to get fertility testing at the beginning of a journey.
Yes.
So go get that done, and then maybe that'll help you make up your mind.
That's great advice. Great advice. I hope everyone's taking that to heart. You're absolutely right. That's an easy enough thing to do. And women don't really think about that until their clock starts ticking. And then, as you say, it could be too late. We just never know. Right.
Yep.
Everybody's timeline is different. So that's wonderful advice. And thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. I think it's wonderful that you are pursuing your dream and have continued to do that and are sharing your story with so many women who clearly, you know, could use this support and guidance, because although your family was supportive and you've been very strong for a lot of people, they feel kind of out to sea by themselves and very insecure about this process. So it's good to know that there are people out there who've done it and that come out on the other end okay, and you're enjoying your life and balancing it all.
Absolutely. And there's a whole community of us on social media. It's not just me. Mm-hmm. There's lots of women that are taking this path. So if you're thinking about it, you're not going to be alone.
Terrific. Oh, that's so nice. Well, thank you so much, Kristen. I really appreciate it. And for all of you out there, you should follow Kristen. How could people find you on social media?
I'm at Just Be Kristin, KRISTIN, on Instagram, and I'm there a lot, so that's the best place to find me.
Terrific. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And for everyone out there, please make sure to check out Kristin. Check us out at familybuilding.net. We have lots of services available for you. And certainly subscribe, because that's how we keep going. And give us a thumbs up if you have a chance. We really appreciate that as well. So we will see you next time. Hi, it's Lisa Schumann, just popping in quickly to say thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked it, please rate, review, and subscribe, because that's how we keep going and come back for more.